You're tuned into People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
These things have to change. Even if it means our standard of living has to change, we can't just possess everything all around the world.
And so I'm out here tonight just to be a drop in the river, because I believe that this river of people that are here tonight is the river that's going to move this mountain.
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Ordering and contact information will be provided later in the show. The Republican National Convention of 2004 marked a very historic week for people across the world. While inside New York's Madison Square Garden, an insipid display of Republican solidarity took place. Outside, the streets filled with actions of dissent. Dissent that took shape in many forms, from a mass protest of bicycle riders against the war in Manhattan, to the setup of a tent city by poor and homeless people in Brooklyn. On this edition of People's Tribune Radio, we focus on three mass actions out of the dozens surrounding the Republican National Convention. We begin with voices of individual people who participated in the United for Peace and Justice March, held Sunday, August 29, 2004, where an estimated 500,000 people joined in solidarity.
My name is Conrad Johnson.
Frederick Johnson.
And why are you two guys marching today?
Primarily, we're here to oppose the Bush agenda. We have nothing personal against the Republicans who are here. We wish them welcome as people and as human beings, but we wish they would take their agenda and their president out of New York, out of the White House, and out of the country.
Mostly, I'm here because of the foreign policy, all of it, causing misery and creating enemies all over the world.
Frederick Johnson, why does foreign policy stand out to you so much?
Because so many people are affected. Americans who go there and die, the money that's wasted over there that could be used to do constructive things here and in other places in the world. And it creates enemies. Where our foreign policy creates enemies all over the world. Makes everybody less safe than they ever were before.
Why'd you bring the whole family down?
I think it's important for everyone in the family to understand the ramifications of the politics that's going on, not only in the Democratic Party, but the Republican Party. It's a time for America to address issues and not silly stuff about who's got what war medals and that. We want to hear about what are they going to do about 40 million people without health care? What are they going to do about bringing our troops home and stop bombing the people of Iraq and assisting the Israeli army to occupy the people of Palestine as if they're some kind of indentured servants or slaves? There are a lot of real issues that we as Americans have to begin to come to terms with, so that we can become a more civil and humane people to ourselves at home and to people around the world. This is not just about the war, and this is more about what are we going to be as a people, as a country. We're in trouble as a country. I believe we're at a crossroads, and we are going to have to begin to address real issues as a people. Iraq, it's just a symptom of what's really wrong with this country. The super rich create this atmosphere of fear on top of fear. We create enemies to the tune of 1 billion Muslim people with the way we assist the Israelis in Palestine. And us moving from country to country looking for natural gas and oil is, you know, not to buy it, but to take it. These things have to change. Even if it means our standard of living has to change, we can't just possess everything all around the world. Whatever's in that country that these people are living in, then we have to buy it, trade for it, barter for it, or things like that. We can't run around with a super army taking whatever we want, and every day we got 2 to 3 body bags coming home. Sooner or later, the American people are going to have to take notice. What is it? We're over 1,000 now. How many thousands have to die before we begin to change? You know? And we're just talking about the dead. Sooner or later, we're going to have to get around to all the injured soldiers. We have a lot of disabled soldiers coming home. You barely see them on television, in the newspapers, but they are here. And they are victims of this oppression and greed that's going on in this country. It's got to change.
Why does this touch you so much?
Because I like to think of myself as a civil person. I'd rather do without than go next door and beat someone in the head and take what they have. That's why.
Thank you.
Go get a bandana.
No, not now.
Margarita Herrera from Central America.
Tell me a little bit about what brought you here.
I'm here because I am sick and tired of Bush and the Cheney team. They're corrupt. They're liars. They do not help the poor. I think that the poor are totally neglected. You know, their public schools are horrible. It's outrageous that the public school system is so bad and so neglected.
Brian from New Jersey.
All right, Brian from New Jersey. Tell me a little bit about your experience on the march today.
Well, today was just a march, a gathering of people who all basically want the same thing, a change in power, a change in the way we're heading policy-wise, and a change for the better, hopefully.
What made you come out here to join up with the march?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, enough is enough with the war. I mean, a couple of my friends already passed away in Iraq. And how many people my age are going to die for a war that's not even based on what people were saying it was on? No weapons of mass destruction have been found. We've changed the leadership, and the country's more violent. And besides that, look at home. Middle-class people can barely survive. To put a child through college now, you have to go into bankruptcy. So things have to change, and if this could help facilitate that change, then I'm all for it.
Do you think it's going to end with changing the regime that's in power now?
Well, Democrat-Republican, the line is pretty much the same right now. I mean, unfortunately, we can't have a third party in this country. I think that would ultimately be the way to bring about change. But with the Democratic leadership in power, hopefully they listen to their constituency for once and promote real change. So that's the best we could hope for.
If you could envision a better U.S. society, what would you seek out to change?
One that respects the world and one that wants to distribute wealth and not hoard wealth. I also a United States that's more willing to conform to people. You know, homosexuality is not a disease. It's you're born. You don't choose to be that way. We have to change this mentality and maybe break away a little bit from religious roots. Church and state should be separated, and they're just blurring closer together. So if we can do that, we'd be on the right track.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man. Have a good day. Thank you.
Deborah Granick.
I'm Brenda Zussman.
Jonathan Scheuer.
What brought you out here to the march? I saw you videotaping.
Well, first of all, it feels very much part of our neighborhood, so it would be too hard to stay inside when you know that all these people that are your neighbors and New Yorkers are out here, even if you feel like, oh, maybe I'll get tired because I'm super pregnant. But I had to come out, and I'm so happy that the city, that it worked out. I just feel so happy today that something that seemed like so vital to do and it seemed so devastating that it was going to be squashed. So I'm happy that it's happening.
And you are super pregnant. What was your reasons for videotaping?
We thought it'd be interesting for her to know sort of what was happening the couple days before she was born. And the fact is, she seems to be waiting to be born until she's very due right now. She seemed to wait for me to go to the Women's March yesterday and to this march today. So we thought we'd create some documents for her to see what 2004, what New York looked like, what the good people looked like when they came out.
I got the impression that this is a father. Yeah. What do you think about the march and sharing this with your daughter?
It's wonderful. I think it's very empowering, and I'm just hoping we prevail in November.
I'm the grandmother-to-be, and I, from Washington, D.C., came here to visit and to be here for the birth of my granddaughter. And I've been a marcher since the 1960s when we marched against Vietnam and protested in the streets in Washington and elsewhere in the country, and I am here today absolutely proud of people and the power of people to show up for change, to get rid of Bush, to know that there's a new day coming and that we will have a land of fairness, equality. No child will be hopefully left behind like they are now by the boatloads. Nobody's being cared for educationally or environmentally. We are become a warring nation, and that's just not right for future generations, for my granddaughter's generation. I want to see peace, not war.
You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. We just heard from a few of the thousands of voices who attended the United for Peace and Justice March against the war. Today, we're highlighting a few of the many protests which surrounded the Republican National Convention. We move next to correspondent Mike Thornton, who shares with us voices from the Veterans for Peace rally just hours before George W. Bush accepted his presidential nomination from the Republican Party.
Fernando Suarez de Solar, his son Jesus, was a U.S. soldier killed in Iraq.
The Bush administration gave me the official papers, and the official papers say your son died in combat when received the shot on the head with the enemy fire. I don't have any reason for not believe this one. But 3 days late, the ABC News report called me and say, Mr. Suarez, somebody lied. Your son not die with the enemy fire. I have video and I know what happened with your son. My son died when they stepped the American cluster bomb. I'm waiting for 2 hours for medical assistance. When the Spain military base is no more than 30 minutes in the place my son died. I visit Iraq in December. I see the place my son died. I walk into the Spain military base and it's no more than 20 minutes. Why the administration lied me about my son dying?
Why do you think they lied to you?
For negligency, cover the negligence, or because I speak out against the war, it's possible the administration say it is good opportunity for Mr. Suarez not defend the Iraqi people and support the war for revenge. But not happen after this one. And I am here too because Mr. Bush speak about today, gonna speak about the compassion. Compassion, when the children in Iraq is die because not have a medicine. Compassion when the beautiful boys like my son, beautiful girls, die in Iraq in this illegal war. And I am here because I need to show the American people my story, because I believe it's possible the people changed the attitude for the next November 2nd.
David Klein, a Vietnam veteran, is national president of Veterans for Peace. We spoke with him at the rally at Union Square.
This vigil for the fallen is to remember those who lost their lives since the United States invasion of Iraq in March of 2003. And we're out here to bring to the American public the human cost of this war and a misguided policy, a war that we didn't have to fight, a war that was based on lies, and a war that was based on trying to seize the natural resources of the people.
When it comes to advocating for peace, Klein believes that combat veterans have a unique role to play.
If you haven't seen war, many of us know what war is really about. Many of the American people only know war from movies or video games. And so some people think it is a game. But we, having seen war, many of us know the brutality and the cruelty of it and know that it should be only the last resort. And when veterans speak out, it makes people have to at least think twice, because when they say the red, white, and blue, I'm a disabled veteran. I was wounded 3 times. So when they point to that red, white, and blue, I point to it and I say, part of the red in that red, white, and blue is my blood. And this is an act of genuine patriotism, and we want to get all the people in the country to understand that.
The Abraham Lincoln Brigade was a group of Americans who volunteered to go fight along with other internationals against the fascist regime in Spain prior to World War II. Mo Fishman, Secretary General of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, also spoke at the Vigil for the Fallen in Union Square.
This was an anti-fascist war. And if they'd listened to the Spanish people with the help of the international brigades, we might not have had World War II with 60 million dead and the havoc and the danger that the fascists would have won that war. And certainly World War II, the fight against fascism, was a just war. We had to be in that war. There was the danger that fascism would have conquered the world. And it was almost there. A just war is in the best interest of the peoples of the country conducting it and the peoples who are there being attacked. That is a just war. There is a difference between a just war and an unjust war. Unfortunately, the United States has not been in a just war ever since World War II. Neither Korea nor the Vietnam War, and I put it to you that the Vietnam War created a groundswell difference of opinion for patriotism in Americans. It is right to defend our country when it is right, and it is our duty to correct it when it's wrong. And that's what we're doing here today, And I thank you all for being present. And let's continue to be correct and get rid of George Bush and change the policies here. Why not?
Marine Sergeant Will Hunt of Seattle, Washington, is an Iraq war veteran. Some 15 of his men, many of them friends, were killed in the Battle of Al-Nasiriyya.
Al-Nasiriyya was the worst mess that I've ever been through in my entire life. We didn't have the proper armor for the sides of our vehicles, and our air officer wasn't paying any attention. When a company pushed north like they were supposed to across the northern bridge of Iraq, of Al-Nasiriyya, the air officer told the Air Force A-10s to kill everything north of the northern bridge. The A-10s came in and started killing United States Marines, not even firing at Iraqis. And it took a brave soldier, Sergeant Schaefer, to hold up a United States flag to stop the A-10s from bombing them.
Sergeant Hunt says that he knew the war and the battle plan were mistakes pretty much from the very beginning.
I wanted the weapons inspectors to do their jobs. I figured, hey, it's better to wait 3 months and let the weapons inspectors do their jobs than to lose my buddy's life. And then one day, Bush just gets on the radio and says, okay, we're going in. And the weapons inspectors hadn't even finished half of their job. In a country the size of Texas, they barely even covered a city the size of New York. How can he say that, well, we have to go now? What's wrong with waiting? And the fact that he made up a plan in which Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz make up the battle plan and totally forget what the generals are telling him. Generals who have served their entire lives just for this moment so they can make a proper battle plan, so they can make it the right way. When I heard the battle plan, the fact that when you go, when you're in the military, you always factor in Murphy's Law. The law that anything can go wrong will go wrong. When I heard about Rumsfeld's plan, he hadn't even factored that in. I had to tell my own soldiers while we were going up into Iraq. I said, if we get gassed in the next couple of days, it's because he has weapons of mass destruction. If it doesn't come, it's because he doesn't have them. And they asked me, what do you think? Do the people of Iraq, are they going to stand up and fight unlike last time? I said, yes, they are. Expect them to fight, and expect them to fight very hard.
When it comes to the Iraq War and its prosecution, a World War II vet and member of America's so-called greatest generation told people at the Vigil for the Fallen in New York City that it was time to go beyond just preaching to the choir.
You got to get out there to the people. Anyone and everyone who will sit and listen to us. We've got to get out and speak to them, to the people. And give them the truth, the lies, the deceptions, the half-truths. You know them all. I don't have to go through them. You know what they are. But we've got to get them across to the people. And if they hear for the very first time, I tell them, you know, only 70% of our troops wound up with the protective body jackets. They said, no. They don't know these things. They don't know that if you got wounded in Iraq and wound up in a hospital, you had to pay $8.10 a day for meals. They didn't know that. Bring the truth to them, not to each other, but out there on the streets. If we do that, we can get the troops home and we can achieve a victory in November. Thanks.
This is People's Tribune Radio. We have been highlighting some of the protests which took place surrounding the 2004 Republican National Convention in New York City. So far, we've heard from the United for Peace and Justice March, held Sunday, August 29th, as well as the Veterans for Peace rally held on Thursday, September 2nd. We now go to the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign's March for Our Lives, where an estimated 10,000 people showed up, allowing the unpermitted march to proceed from the United Nations building down 64 blocks near Madison Square Garden, home of the Republican National Convention. We would like to thank the news department of KVMR in Nevada City, California for providing the sound of this historic march.
Poor people in the United States of America are being made to disappear. This year, four of our brothers and sisters will die.
On Monday, the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign held a March for Our Lives in New York City, site of the Republican National Convention. Participants marched from the United Nations building across downtown Manhattan to a spot 2 blocks from Madison Square Gardens where the convention is being held. A number of activists and well-known personalities joined that march, including Michael Franti, Ethel Longscott of the Women's Economic Agenda Project, and Archdeacon Michael Kendall, who spoke with KVMR's Mike Thornton.
I'm here and standing in solidarity with this Poor People's March. These are people that are suffering as many people are in this country, the number of hungry and homeless people growing. Just ask any church or synagogue if they open their door and they have a soup kitchen, the place fills up, you know, just they can't handle it. There's so many hungry people. And yet, welfare reform is supposed to be working. So we're here standing with people that are on the front line that know this to say this has got to stop. We've got to get out of the business of death, which is war and the kind of politics we have, and back in the business of human need.
Thornton asked Ethel Longscott why she and the Women's Economic Agenda Project were participating in the March for Our Lives.
It is time in America that the people who built this country, who bled, sweat, provided tears, prayers, who built this country with the work off our brows and the contribution of our forefathers and foremothers, this is in their name. But also we are here to fight for the future of our country. We reject the notion that we have to exchange our civil rights or constitutional rights for security. The real security is making sure that every man, woman, and child in our country and on this planet has a right to eat, has a housing, has the health care that they need, has the income for real opportunity. And we know that it takes a broad social movement, and that's what this convening is about, is bringing and continuing that effort and the discontent that is going on across this country. So we are here to serve notice that we are fighting for the future of this country, and we are the ones that can in fact make sure that our country is democratic and available for all of its people.
Leslie Kagan with the organization United for Peace and Justice had led 500,000 marchers on Sunday, was at the March for Our Lives, and told Mike Thornton how she felt about leading a crowd estimated at 500,000 people.
Well, it was a wonderful day. We've been working on it for a long time. What it means, though, is that there are literally millions of people all around this country who are prepared to stand up and say no to the Bush agenda. People who understand that the fight for economic justice, for social justice, is part of our struggle for peace and for an end to the occupation in Iraq. These issues are totally linked to one to another. This country is strong when people have the housing they need. This country is strong when jobs are available for people, when health care is available. And where is the money going to come from all those things? It's going to come out of the military budget. We're not attacking the country. What we're saying is that the policies of the leadership are wrong.
Mark Didzik, national organizer for the Labor Party, told Thornton he was at the March for Our Lives to make sure the voice of the working people would be heard.
This demonstration, this organization of poor people, is really on the cutting edge of asserting the kind of human rights that we stand for.
When you're talking about the voice of the working people being heard, implicit in that statement is that inside Madison Square Garden, the voice of working people is not being heard?
It's being frozen out. There's no way that our voice can be heard in the confines of Madison Square Garden. We can't get through the corporate perimeter that is guarding that convention.
How is it that things have gotten to the point where both of the main political parties, we're talking now, of course, about the Republicans, both of them seem so far removed from the people of this country? How has that happened?
There has always been the failure of working people to build their own powerful political party in this country. There was a moment in the Democratic Party around the New Deal where at least there was an ability for working people's issues to be heard within that party. But beginning at least 30 years ago, those doors have closed as corporations have really moved in and sought to control the agenda. But there's really no room for those issues in either political party.
What's it going to take to turn all of this around, in your opinion?
Well, we've got to build a powerful grassroots movement. There's no magic bullet on this. I mean, you know, what we're trying to do in the Labor Party is help people think about where we're going to be the day after the election on November 3rd and how we can begin to regain the offensive in this country. We can win this fight. If we build the kind of movement that is accountable to no one but the people of this country, we can win this fight. We have the ability to do that, and we need to stand together and do it.
Medea Benjamin with Code Pink and Global Exchange spoke to Thornton about her presence at the march.
to say that the Bush administration not only doesn't represent us, but we're determined to get them out of the White House come November 2nd.
You were also at the front of the big march that took place on Sunday. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it was just an inspiring experience with hundreds of thousands of people there and with a sense of exuberance that not only were we successful in taking the city streets, but the people of New York had welcomed us with such open arms. So I think we felt great about yesterday, and hopefully we'll feel great about the whole week of activities.
Mark Weber, one of the organizers of the tent city called Bushville and the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign March, spoke with Thornton when the march was over.
I'm very happy and very pleased. Our march was extremely successful, and to come from Bushville, you know, and to set up our stage out of crates from the trash and have a press conference in front of the UN and to march and finally end up, you know, within shouting distance of the garden is absolutely amazing. This is a huge victory for us, and we're very pleased.
This was a march that was unpermitted, and nevertheless, you and others decided that you were going to do this. You did it. What does that really say about the state of the poor people's movement here in the U.S.?
Oh, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, you know, we weren't permitted, and we never believed that we needed a permit, nor for our rally at the U.N., because we believe it's part of our constitutional rights to be able to take to the streets. And this just goes to show that the poor are extremely organized. There is a very large movement in this country that is made up of the poor, who have organized the poor, who are about making major changes in this country. And it's not just about getting Bush out of office, and it's not just about this march today. Our work continues tomorrow and the next day and the next day. People shouldn't expect any drastic changes if and when Kerry's elected. You know, it's up to the people to really change this country and change this system, and we can do it.
If you had an opportunity to talk to the delegates inside Madison Square Garden for a minute or two, what would you say to them?
I would listen. You know, I'd want to know their particular beliefs and views, pretty sure that 99.9% of them who may be opposed to what we're doing have never experienced poverty themselves, have never been homeless, who have not had family members die because of not having health care. It's that saying, you know, walk in someone else's shoes. And I would really tell them stories of children who can't eat in this country. I would ask them, why do 18,000 people die last year and will die this year from not having health care, which is more people than were killed in Iraq, you know? And these are all questions that seem to not be asked in this country. I would ask why we can pull billions of dollars out of thin air to fund a war for that profits a handful of billionaires, and we can't begin to address issues of how to form universal health care and housing and free education and a job at a living wage.
That is it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. PT Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the wealth created by advanced technology is used to ease the suffering of the most destitute. If you would like to order this program or find out about some of our other print and media resources, please call our 800 number, 1-800-691-6888. The number once again is 1-800-691-6888. Or visit us online at www.lrna.org. I'm Kenny Shook, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, thank you for listening, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.